My name is Chris Reeves, otherwise known as Bone. 29 June 1965. I remember a lot of the music because you had the glam period. I liked T-Rex, and he reminded me of the kid out of HR Puff and stuff. What was 73? The Sweet. Maybe sorry to say Gary Glitter. Yeah. And it just sort of emerged. You know, it was obviously on the news. So my dad would be grumbling, get your hair cut. Yeah, so you'd hear bits, and it was a bit of a distant sort of thing still. And then probably by 76, I remember seeing an article in one of the local papers about Dave Vanian, because my dad would buy various local papers for the ads to buy things to make a profit on. And there was an article in one about Dave Vanian, you know, about his band and how he was a grave digger in Hemel Hempstead. So I remember seeing that. And then accidentally, in October 1976, the 30th to be precise, me, my brother and some of his friends ended up at Tittenfoot Leisure Centre in Leighton Buzzard because there was a buzz going around. It was a smaller town then. And we were little street kids and something was happening. So we're hanging around outside. One of our friends' older brothers was in a biker gang and he spotted us and came up and goes, "What are you doing here? Piss off home," like, and went, "No," because we knew something was happening. And then when they went in, we kind of followed them and no one was going to stop us because it was a big bunch of bikers. And that was The Damned, 8 days after the release of New Rose. And never actually saw them play. You know, it was just sort of a bit of pandemonium, and then that was kind of it. Some punks got bounced around or whatever. And yeah, my little brother set the fire alarm off apparently, so. And I've since spoken to the captain at a gig in Brighton, and he said he don't remember much because he was drunk and hiding out the back. Yeah, that was probably my first introduction to punk. Second was probably my next door neighbour, who was older. I started Brooklands in 76, and I think it was when we came back after the school holidays, maybe in 77, that my next door neighbour appeared at school with a haircut short, safety pin for her ear or something, and man's shirt with "I Love Johnny Rotten" on the back. And my bedroom was next to hers, so I was listening through the wall to the Ramones and the Sex Pistols and things like that. And then came John Peel, so in the bedroom I'd be nice and quiet listening to John Peel, because if I had it too loud, my dad would be shouting because it'd be school night. I just remember the pivotal moment when I said, yeah, punk is for me, was in 1978, so I'm still only 12, 13, because my birthday's in the middle of the year. And it was school holidays, and with my grandparents in Surrey, with me and my two brothers in the car, we're going to a park, and X-Ray Specs Identity was playing on the radio, and I insisted that we stayed in the car until the end of the song, so I could listen to it all the way through, which they allowed. And then I decided from listening to that, it's all about your identity and probably going through puberty as well at the time. And it was about finding who you were, identity, and that sort of appealed to me. And then I started making my own punk clothes. Yeah, I remember I wanted a pair of brothel creepers, and all I could get was some weird imitations from Kay's catalogue. Don't know where it came from. Some weird jacket was sort of zipped up diagonally. It was like a gas maintenance jacket or something. And I punked that up, pinned little bits of bathroom plug chain on it, you know. And I got some fur from the hood of my imitation parka, cut that off and made little furry epaulettes, and probably got a marker pen and drew some band names or something. Well, I had undiagnosed autism or something at the time. I was a hyperactive kid, and it was probably to keep me calm. But my gran taught me to sew when I was about 5. I think my mum taught me to knit around about the same time. But yeah, sewing, I made my own punk clothes. Sew the zips on by hand, backstitch, I think. Yeah, maybe cut something off another T-shirt, like a little Union Jack, and sew that on. And little straps with D-rings on them so you could clip things and whatnot. Yeah, I used to make stencils from like an old record cover, draw on it with a marker pen over the top of an album cover maybe to get the letter in, and then cut that out in stencil form, and then car body aerosol cans, like just layer it a bit at a time so it doesn't splurge everywhere. And my hair, I think my first individual cut, because in the 70s I used to wear my hair past shoulder length most of the time. I don't know why I had a thing about the bass player's haircut from the Boomtown Rats, like a bowl cut. So that was a bit radical then from what I had. Stopped going to a barber's in 1979. Got into the scar thing for a while, because I started to cut my own hair and do little weird things with it for a while. And I wanted a Mohican, and I was going to do it myself. My dad was dead against all that. And he said, well, if you're going to have it done, you might as well have it done properly. And he did it with hand clippers for me. Yeah, well, he knew I was going to do it anyway, because before that, started cutting it shorter, spiking it up, and I wanted to bleach it. And my next door neighbour was a punk early on, and my mum was going behind my back and getting advice from her about, is there a way I could do it temporarily? And she was suggesting sprays, because I wanted to bleach it. Yeah, I tried the sprays at school, and then it was the day of Stiff Little Fingers at Aylesbury, which is on the Hanks album. I was doing a Saturday job in a frozen food shop, and I went with my boss. I was 15, he was 21, he was like the manager, and he drove us over there. But I bleached my hair the morning of that gig, because my dad had said if I'd bleached my hair, he'd batter me. So I remember bleaching it in the afternoon, and he came home, and I just sat on the sofa waiting for him, waiting for me beating, and just looked at me, shook his head, and sort of walked off, because I challenged him defiantly. Went to Stiff Little Fingers, which was awesome. Pretty memorable would be seeing UK Decay for the first time. Yeah, Bauhaus supporting. So that was my first gig. Other than that, it'd been a sixth form band in the sixth form common room having a little punk gig. You can imagine what that was like. My first band was with Tim Young, because when I was still at school, but I used to walk home from school, and Tim lived in a bedsit at the end of the road, and I used to sometimes see him with his hair and his clothes and whatever. And one day I got to talk to him, and I used to pop in sometimes to see him on the way home from school, and he'd be grumpy because I'd woken him up at 3 o'clock in the afternoon or whatever. And I got him up one day, and we're walking out, and he's just grumbling about how he'd been in a band, how he, you know, he wasn't in a band anymore. I wish I was still in a band. I said, we'll just start another one. It's not that easy, Bone. I went, yeah, it is. I'll be in your band. That's two people. Just need another two people. Because I couldn't play, I didn't own an instrument. I just got fed up with him moaning, really. So we did, we started a band. Tim had been in the kids' home in Leighton. He was now in a bedsit. Our drummer, Andres, was still in the kids' home. And in order to practice in the kids' home in the basement, we employed the services of a 25-year-old hippie carer on guitar. And we used to sort of have cups of tea and toast and write songs up in the kitchen.
What was the name of your band?
Certified Insane, because I think we all saw the same child psychologist. We did two gigs in 3 months. The first one was at the Compass Club. Tim managed to blag us on stage between a couple of other bands. I think we had 2 songs. So we did it, made our noise, people jumped around, got a clap at the end of it. Job done, first gig. Second gig, I got us a gig at Cedar School in Leighton Buzzard, supporting a friend's band, Absent Friends, which was Nick Hawkins, who later went on to play with Big Audio Dynamite. And when I told Tim I got us the gig, his reaction was, I'm not playing there, it's a Ponzi school. Because it used to be a grammar school, and we went to Van Dyke, which is poor people. Right, when everyone else was into it, I said, we're doing it without you then, you're sacked. So we did it, and I got my nose broken coming off stage by one of the local skinheads. I mean, even at school, he had a reputation, the inter-school fighting, and he had a bit of a hair trigger. And yeah, it was all right. I'd borrowed an electric guitar off my younger brother to get a friend in, and in order to get him in, we said he was part of the band. And we had him on stage with us, miming. He was 6'5", and we gave him this tiny, like, kid-sized K guitar with a lead put down the stage. And he was just miming on stage while we were performing, like, getting really into it. Yeah, he had a blue Mohican glasses. I painted half my face eggshell blue and sort of zigzag lines, and had my hair ginger. Yeah, it was a mad gig. And then when I came off stage, this guy had this guitar, and I went, oh, don't fuck around with it, because I knew his reputation. He went, put it in my hands and then punched me on the nose, and then immediately went, come on, let's get cleaned up. Yeah. But we ended up good friends. I used to bleach my hair at school. I think for a while I had it yellow and purple by accident, because I bleached it. I was getting away with that, and I thought I'd do the sides black, but I did it with temporary harmony colour, and it went purple, which I liked. And I went, oh, it was a total accident. But also, people used to give me bits of their unused crazy colour. So when it was bleached, I'd go off for gigs at the weekends, come back on school on a Monday, there'd be bits of green and red and things. And I think the final straw for the school, because they took me out of all my lessons because of the way I dressed, because I used to have my leather jacket and my Bondi's trousers and things, because school colour was anything in black, white, red or grey. So all my punk clothes were sort of white and black with red, and so I wore those and sort of stood me ground. Like, they moaned about the hair every now and again, and I thought, right, school colours, red. So I dyed it bright red, and I got called up in the headmaster's office, and it was sat himself on my desk all casual, and it was, well, you haven't been any real problem to us apart from your appearance. You know, parents would complain about me. Their children couldn't concentrate because of my appearance. So I used to have to do my lessons on my own outside the headmaster's office. Parents are talking or whatever, so I'm going to have to do something to make it look right. So he said, I'm going to have to suspend you. But he goes, just come back when it's a normal colour. And I put my head down, thought about it. I went, come back when it's a normal colour. And I thought, well, that's not going to happen. So I just looked up, looked him in the eyes. I went, see ya. And I just turned around and walked out and waited to be called back. And I never was. So I was kind of permanently suspended. I just didn't go back. And they never asked. Nah, it wasn't the best of childhoods. My dad was very football, fighting, you know, fucking and drinking, basically. Very arrogant. You'll never be as good as me. You know, no patience. And I was too sensitive, which obviously I didn't know I had Asperger's or whatever at the time, so I would have been more sensitive. And probably wanted a version of himself, and I wasn't going to be that. Mum was very hard work. Wasn't allowed to have friends around the house, and everything was all sort of keep it quiet. So neighbours down here and weird. Yeah, domestic violence in the house and stuff. Didn't like it. Quite happy not to come home from school, go and see friends. You know, I quite often eat at friends' houses. Yeah, again, and sort of punk thing. I mean, I was quite shy and quite quiet inside, but I had to kind of face this barrage of sensory overload, and I found a home there. Yeah, you were accepted. I think starting bands, the youth club in Leighton, Van Dyke, was quite important for local bands because it was cheap. You know, obviously you had somewhere to all get together. You weren't bothered. You get a cup of tea, get a couple of members, you pay 20 pence for like bring an amp and a guitar in, and then you let everyone else in through the window. So that was always a good laugh. So it was like a little social event. I've practiced in a garage, and it is loud and it hurts your ears and gives you tinnitus. Interesting being there for other band members' practices and seeing some of the quote musical differences. Occasionally end up in fisticuffs. Yeah, musicians, bunch of flakes, a lot of them. I started on bass. I didn't own a bass, so I used to borrow from Sue Limbert from the Chronic Outburst. She lent me her bass and her amp, and I used to drag it across town to practices. Yeah, that was how I started. And I learned to play in practices with Tim shouting at me because I played with a top string with my thumb, and he'd go, don't play it like that, don't look right. He also had a go at the hippie carer that we used to practice in the basement at the kid's home, because he had a Fender, long hair, and in between sort of our crappy little songs, he'd be like noodling away. And I remember Tim shouting at him going, oi, Hendrix, this is a punk band, stop that. Like, punk was all about everyone being who they wanted to be, standing up for people's rights, things like that. And I think that still carries on. I think punk changed the world. I mean, I'm a bit like an old man sometimes when I talk to younger people. When I say younger people, 40. It's like Professor Yaffle, the Carvewood and Bookend. I've got my walking stick and I'm like, I remember punk rock. And we really did change a lot. We changed attitudes. We were unpopular with the government and the authorities because we said no. We questioned why, and they didn't want that. And a lot of things have changed because of the issues that we brought up. Society was a lot more closed. There was no internet, there was no mobile phones. It took communication. People knew how to communicate. How about people are just people, and it's time we learned to get along. I mean, there was a lot of camaraderie, a lot of support, a lot of changes. We made things happen. Yeah, again, with music, I mean, started a band with a couple of friends, and everyone we knew in bands, we'd ask them for a support slot, and everyone was positive. It was like, oh yeah, we'll see what we can do, and then nothing came back. So we decided to put our own gig on, and it's all about the benefits gigs. The other two members were in a kids' home in Luton, and across the road there was a church hall which we hired to do a benefits gigs for a children's home. and we invited all the bands that hadn't given us support slots to come and play for free, and then put on a gig, and we played in with our band, so we got a gig. And I played, yeah, I played in one of the others as well, so I played in two of the bands that were performing. We had about 10 bands, I think. Made it by the time we'd forked out for PA and petrol money and things, we'd made about £6 profit, which I think the other two spent on chips and cider, and that's fair enough because it was a benefit for the children's home and they were in it, so chips and cider all around. I would like to start another band. So if anybody is interested in starting a kind of art noise punk band, contact me through Facebook or something. Whatever instrument you can play, that is fine. I quite like the idea of playing lead triangle in a death metal band.